Okay, the Early Childhood and Youth Development Committee comes to order, and the first thing is we're supposed to explain on record, I guess, to the committee that all we did in the past was incorrect about recommending bills, so I think you all got, hopefully, a notice from Patrick McCormick about your motion whenever you're moving a bill. It's now that I recommend the bill pass and be re-referred to either the such and such committee or to the general register. So if you make a mistake, if I make a mistake, which is probably more likely, the experts will treat it as saying that. No, that's not the new language. The other language. This is if you, that's just an alternative, but they'd prefer you just use what I read and see it's the general register. Okay, thank you. Yes, we don't have any minutes to do so. Representative Loeffler, House File 2206, go ahead and make your new motion and then present the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since I'm not a member of your committee,
I'll move that it be referred
to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee.
I will move that the bill 2206 be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee.
That's correct.
Go ahead. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and appreciate you sliding us in on short notice to an opportunity and in front of your committee. And this is a bill dealing with kids who have some pretty serious kind of issues in their life and the time frames by which they need to be screened, and so that we can get them the care they need and put them in the right place to move forward with their life. And it was brought to me by the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and Sue Abderholt is here to explain the bill further.
Thank you. Ms. Abderholden.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. This bill actually came out of a task force at the Department of Human Services that was focusing on the discharge and transition of children with mental illnesses back into the community, whether it's from a hospital or residential treatment, all of those kinds of things. And they had a number of recommendations, and one of them was to make the screening team timelines the same, whether a child is under PMAP or has to go through the county. The way that this works, and I know it sounds really odd, but if a child needs residential treatment and they don't have insurance to pay for it, or the insurance is only going to pay the medical part, they actually have to go through the county to pay for the room and board part of the residential treatment. And so the county pulls this team together to decide whether that child should go into treatment. Right now with the PMAP, they have a 10-day timeline, and the county's had a 15. They thought it would be, you know, good to try to speed that process up. These children are sitting in a hospital or in a shelter waiting for that decision to be made to go into residential treatment. We have heard just before, and because, you know, this all moved pretty quickly, that the counties do have some concerns, and you all know that I'm always willing to work with them and try to clarify it. They thought it was a little too broad right now in terms of it affects kids, you know, who are going into foster care. It's unfortunate these screening teams are set up this way, but it is really, for us, it's a healthcare issue, and we want those decisions to be made quickly. And so we'll continue to work, you know, with the counties to try to address their concerns.
Is there anybody that has questions at this point before we ask for other witnesses? Okay. Is there anybody that wants to testify on this bill? Anyone else? No one? Okay. Then I guess we can...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we all share the same end goal, as always. Sometimes our statutes pick up maybe a few more people than we thought, and we need to just make sure that we clarify that in the committee that sorts through all the different populations that get affected by screening teams. So we'll make sure that that gets attended to with this continuing the goal of moving people as fast as we can.
Thank you. Then the chair will renew his motion to re-refer this to the Health and Human Services Policy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before I forget, stand up. We have a new page for this year, Emily Edstrom, and thank you. Okay, and then my bill will be next, so if you want to shift over.
Representative Mallory, would you like to remove?
remove.
Bring your bill before the committee.
yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move re-referral to which finance committee? I think Health and Human Services Finance.
Health and Human Services Policy.
Health and Human Services Policy. Okay. And members, if you remember, I had a bill last year which set up a committee to, over the interim, that would be staffed by the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And it was to look at different aspects of the juvenile justice system and try to make them coordinate better and work together. And they met, there was, I think, roughly 40 people on the committee. Very different groups of people, including parents of children, and different agencies, different aspects. And they met and came up with certain bills, and this is one of them. And the in order to help youth, it was decided that there should be certain changes in the way the screening was done and the notification, and then the as to who would pay in certain cases, so that we make sure that the youth do get the treatment that they need if the screening indicates it and the assessment needs it. And basically that's what it's for. And then Representative Meyer had a question on the data privacy issue, and I believe Bill Weiss from the department can answer that question. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to my witness, Ms. McClafferty.
Welcome. Would you identify yourself and give your testimony?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anna McClafferty. I'm the Criminal Justice Director at NAMI Minnesota and helped to run the work group that Representative Mallory directed us to complete over the last, or during the interim. And a really big motivation for the group was to address the shortage of interagency collaboration to provide coordinated and evidence-based treatment and services to reduce youth's risk of juvenile justice involvement overall. And a major barrier that the work group identified, and that has been identified in past stakeholder groups looking at the juvenile justice system in Minnesota as well, is that while some data are collected at the local level, the individual level of about youth needs, aggregate statewide data is not examined. And there are actually currently statutory provisions that prevent DHS from looking at data on an aggregate level. And this makes it impossible to make data-driven decisions about which programs and treatments are most needed to improve outcomes for Minnesota's youth who are at risk of or experiencing juvenile justice involvement. So the bill would increase the number of youth who undergo screenings while still preserving parents' and caregivers' right to decline to have their son or daughter screened if they prefer. And it would make it easier for youth to move to the next step of receiving a mental health assessment when it's appropriate if screening results indicate a need for more attention to a particular child. And the bill would also help indicate whether there are treatment and service gaps in the system that are likely unmet, service needs that are likely unmet, that could help to reduce juvenile justice contact and improve outcomes for youth. And I think, finally, just an important piece to point out about the bill is that the bill does not change the nature, the private nature of screening data. No individual data would become public in any kind of way as a result of this bill. I know that's kind of a potential concern that might be out there. It only increases the amount of information not individual information, but aggregated information that DHS has about what's coming out of the screenings, and just as a general indication of what's going on with the kids in terms of their mental health and juvenile justice system. So,
And Madam Chair, I'd like to ask that Bill Weiss come up so that he can, rather than going to the question
okay,
and back,
great.
I know the question, so I said that I'd have him answer it. So, from
welcome. Would you introduce yourself and proceed?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Weiss. I work for the Department of Human Services Children's and Mental Health Division.
And go ahead, please.
I think the question that comes up is, these are screening instruments, and they don't provide any diagnostic information. They don't provide any specific information. These instruments are to detect if a child may have a mental health issue. And so what we look at is by scoring these, it gives them a positive or negative score. A negative score would indicate that further referral is probably not necessary. A positive score based on these self-report instruments says that, hey, there's possibly something going on with the child. It has nothing to do with diagnosis, and then the referral, as Anna mentioned, would go on to a more formal diagnostic assessment that would help the family determine what's going on with their child.
All right, thank you. Representative Myra?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I still have concerns about line 3.27 and 3.28. In statute, we previously said screening results shall be considered private data and the commissioner shall not collect individual screening results. We've had issues with driver's license database and MNsure and data being released. By striking that, we're saying it could be public information. I find it very disconcerting. I think we should, instead of having this go to, was it Health and Human Service Policy, I think the Civil Law Committee should be taking a look at this and having a chance to review this change.
Madam Chair, Representative, these instruments, once they are scored, they don't provide any identifying information about the outcome of a child. It just tells if there's a potential issue that may need to have further a diagnostic assessment. So there's nothing in here, I believe, that would be revealing. It's an aggregate process of us getting information to kind of determine how we can evaluate the use of these funds. So that's how I think it works.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just building on that point, I thought the other testifier mentioned that we would be using this information on a statewide basis to determine what medically necessary steps are appropriate given a certain situation a child may have. We'll look at that in the aggregate and then determine maybe what best practice would be going forward. Wouldn't we keep individually identifiable and identifiable information then in that situation in order to accomplish that goal?
Mr. Reese?
Madam Chair, Representative, the way it would work is the information would be stored in the systems that the department, our SSIS system. These are the systems that counties use for case management. Currently right now, the way it works is in the system, there's a field in SSIS that says it was a screening completed, yes or no. Currently, we have no idea the results of those screening results, so we can't go on for further analysis to determine what happens next. So, I mean, we would devise in a way that would not identify. I mean, in the department would have information about did they have a positive or negative screen. That's the information we would have. We wouldn't be in the position of collecting subscores to determine what areas that were problematic. It's just determining if they had a positive screen, what the next steps would be.
Mr. Representative Barrett.
Madam Chair, then just a follow-up question. I guess I'm having a hard time determining why that information would be useful to keep in the aggregate.
Mr. Reed.
Madam Chair, Representative, currently right now, as I indicated, we have no idea to know what the next step are for these children that have a screen. As indicated, right now in the system, it says, did you have a screen, yes or no? But we don't know what the next steps are. So the department isn't able to evaluate the next steps to find out how kids are being evaluated for assessment. We can't do a very good job of looking how this program is evaluated without having further information that tells us how many kids in the system got a positive screen, how many kids that got a positive screen were referred on for an assessment, and then what services were then recommended for that child. I mean, that's kind of the linear model that would best help us to evaluate how this program is working, but currently right now we don't have that ability to do that.
Representative Barrett.
Sure, just a quick follow-up then. Then to me, I guess the bill as it sits now leaves it too open for having too much information available that would not be kept private when all we're looking for is a yes or no in a field regarding a positive screen. So that's a comment, not a question, but if you'd like to answer that, Representative Mullery, that'd be great.
Madam Chair, I think he can explain better. Is that
Mr. Rees, would you like to answer that?
Madam Chair, Representative, could you please restate your question?
Sure. Madam Chair, it seems like this bill allows for a lot of information to be moved from private to potentially public. More information that is necessary to answer the question that you just posed to us, which is a yes or a no on whether they passed or failed a mental health screening.
Madam Chair, currently, right now, as I indicated, the only thing we know is that they had a screen. We have no idea to know if they had a positive or negative screen at all. So with the language we have today and the language in the Act, it says private. And so by only knowing if they had a screen, there's no other further steps that we can take to do an analysis to say, okay, from a state perspective, how many kids did get referred on? How many kids did get mental health services? And that's the purpose of us collecting this information. Now, of course, it's just aggregate information that tells us if they got that screen positive or negative. And that's all the information I believe we'd be collecting. As I indicated, we're not interested in collecting subscores that are based on these instruments at all. It has nothing to do with diagnostic information at all.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Mullery.
Thank you. And I think that it has to go for sure to Health and Human HHS policy, and then it may have to go to civil law. And so we could work with Lori Krupinski and the Department of HHS and anybody concerned about that as to whether this only does what the department thinks it does or whether there's a concern that we need to add language or something like that. Or so I think that since it has another stop before it, it'd have to go to civil law. We'd work with
your suggestion.
Everybody that, and I can't remember what department Lori Krupinski, I think she's an admin, but we could work with them and the department and whoever is concerned about the language in here doing what he says is necessary.
So you're suggesting we continue on to HHS policy and then eventually see if we have
beforehand
to go to civil law, et cetera.
And we can talk to the chair of civil law, too, in the meantime.
Okay. Does that make you feel more comfortable?
Madam Chair, thank you. Yeah, apparently my point was well taken by the author. I appreciate that. We'll work on that in the appropriate committee to make sure the language it does precisely and no more than what we intended to do.
Okay. Our Representative Moline.
Thank you. And there's also Linda Hanson from Dakota County.
Oh, Matt, I'm sorry. I had a question for DHS.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I too want to talk about the privacy provisions. It looks like to me that these screenings could happen based on if a child is found to be delinquent or a child found to have committed a juvenile petty offense. And my question has to do with DHS licensing provisions as far as employment goes. There's a very low threshold for DHS to determine that somebody can't be employed in a certain field, preponderance of the evidence. They can use charges that were dismissed. They can use juvenile offenses. My question is, if these screenings are now going to the commissioner of DHS, can that information be used under the DHS licensing standards to say that somebody cannot be employed in a certain field that is subject to those licensing standards?
Madam Chair, I do not believe that's correct. That's not, no.
Madam Chair.
Representative Moline.
I guess why, give me a little more comfort in why you do not believe that's correct.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure I quite understand your question. These are screenings that occur by county employees looking at high-risk kids. This information is to help determine they need a screening, so I'm not sure how it ties with licensing and those questions.
Representative Moline.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Because they can have the screen as a result of a juvenile delinquency petition or the finding that they are delinquent, and then the screening could happen, and, you know, I don't know what all the information is in that screening or what the outcome could be, or if it, you know, is ultimately saying that the child could be, you know, guilty of the offense that was before the court, the juvenile court, whatever. And so if that information is then in the possession of the commissioner and they do the background check for employment purposes, can that information be used to bar them from employment under the licensing standards?
Mr. Rees.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, I'm still not understanding how this coincides with licensing at all. In the statute, the screening results can be used at the final disposition of the hearing. So,
okay, Madam Chair,
Representative,
let me clarify then.
Please.
In the future, if this child becomes an adult and they apply for a job that is required to have a background check from DHS, mm-hmm. so in the future, mm-hmm. DHS then has these results from when they were a juvenile and this screening took place. My question is, if when this child becomes an adult and they're looking for a job and they're subject to a background check to be conducted by the Department of Human Services, can that information that was obtained from these screening results be used to bar them from employment?
Mr. Rees.
Yeah, Madam Chair, no, I don't believe so. The part that I think is important is the delinquency finding is a target population of who would be screened. So that's prior to any screenings occurred. Once they meet that target population, as you indicate, delinquency, that's a target population that's looking at to be screened. The screening results are just, did they have a positive or negative screen, which we're trying to obtain through this bill, and I don't believe this has anything to do with background checks at all.
No, Madam Chair, I'm not suggesting this bill has to do with background checks. I'm suggesting that in the future these kids might want a job that requires a background check. You just have to understand that I'm very nervous about the Department of Human Services having any more information on delinquency petitions and juvenile petitions because of the latitude that they have in preventing people from employment under the licensing statute.
Madam Chair. Sue Abraham, Minnesota. One way to think about it is that the screenings are done on a whole lot of different kids, not just kids who are in the juvenile justice system. There are kids who are in the child welfare system. There's kids who've been suspended numerous times. A screening is think about it in terms of a thermometer. It doesn't tell you that you necessarily have an illness or a disease. It just tells you that maybe you need to look at this further. So it would be pretty difficult to make that leap, and it's really, in essence, a healthcare record. So you can't say, it would be impossible to say that every child who's had a screening was in the juvenile justice system. You can't make that connection in the system.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not at all saying that. I understand there's many different scenarios where a child would have the screening, but in the statute it does say that the child can be subject to the screening if the child is found to be delinquent or the child is found to have committed a juvenile petty offense for a third or subsequent time. So those children can be subjected to a screening. And my question is, and I don't know how familiar you are with the licensing standards for employment, but the commissioner has a great amount of latitude to bar people from employment. And so my concern is this information is not getting to the commissioner now. Under this bill, it is getting to the commissioner. These kids become adults. They want to apply for a job that requires a background check by the commissioner. And lo and behold, the commissioner has information in their possession from when they were a juvenile that could ban them from employment under the licensing statute.
Madam Chair, Representative, the problem is that you can't make that leap. You can't say that because you can find in that child's social service record that they had a screen, that it was necessarily tied to juvenile justice, because we do it under other systems as well. So you will find that a child, I mean, I don't even know how the commissioner gets that data, but the child has, it's not every child that's been screened in our SSIS system has not necessarily had a screening because they were in juvenile justice.
No, I know. Madam Chair, I understand that. Maybe we can, in the future, add, maybe as this bill moves through the process, add some language that those screenings just can't be used as part of consideration for employment background checks by DHS, because it does give me great concern. I mean, I think for those of us that have looked at those licensing statutes and we found out that the commissioner is using charges that result in, or arrests that result in not even charges, they are using charges that result in the not guilty disposition. So, you know, I just have concerns with the amount of latitude that the commissioner has in barring people from employment. So if the commissioner has more information in their possession of something that could get in the way of future employment, that gives me great concern. And, you know, I guess I would like a little more comfort level than what I'm being told here today and what's in the current bill. So, and I know the author is very sensitive to those issues as well. So, you know, maybe if we can work on something together.
Madam Chair, I'll certainly work on that, because this definitely is an item to I carried the bill to try and greatly open up what the commissioner can waive and things like that. We're the big problem, actually, for the commissioner. We've got horrible statutes, in my opinion, banning people from working for almost anything if they sneeze wrong time. But I think all this does is say whether or not they had a screening, and as Ms. Abderholden pointed out, that information could come from all kinds of sources. So the commissioner would only have that they had a screening, and that, which could come from anything. It could have come from a doctor's office, various things. And I'm sure that the commissioner could not form, I can't imagine how I, as an attorney, could formulate a case to prohibit somebody from employment in anything just from knowing that at some time they had a screening in their life, but for something.
Representative Lee,
Madam Chair, that may be true, but people who are barred from employment by DHS don't have the right to go to court and argue their case. It's an administrative process. So, yeah, I would agree with you that it'd be hard to make the argument, but unfortunately there's a lot of power given to DHS in the statute, and so that's my concern.
Shall we move on to Representative Howe, who's been waiting for a while?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And where my question comes from is actually looking at line 320 and 321, when it talks about uninsured and paying for an assessment would cause the child's family financial hardship. With the passing of Mincher last year, is this just not required? Do we actually have underinsured folks in there anymore with Mincher?
You might as well.
Ms. Abderholden.
Madam Chair, Representative, sorry, I got tired of kneeling. There could still be families that are underinsured. You could have a policy offered through your employer that has a really large deductible. And that's what we saw in the schooling to mental health grants, that there were families that were considered underinsured because they had a $5,000 or a $6,000 deductible. And so to pay for something was pretty difficult unless it was, you know, catastrophic. So we're certainly hoping that it's reduced over time. But again, you know, Mincher is when you don't have affordable insurance, and affordable is, you know, not easily defined. And so you could still have it through your employer, have a high deductible plan.
Thank you. Anything more, Mr. Howe? Representative Howe?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought that with the Affordable Health Care Act, we lowered all that. I know that not all employers are quite there yet, and I know that time has been extended, but I thought that all of those policies are going to be brought into line, and all the non-conforming policies will be voided, and they'll have to come in compliance and provide these coverages, is what I had anticipated with Mincher and with the ACA.
Madam Chair, Representative
Abderholden.
One of the problems is with self-insured plans. So self-insured plans have a greater latitude in terms of what they offer and what they provide. For instance, self-insured plans, even under the ACA, don't have to cover mental health and substance use disorder treatment. It's just if they cover it, they have to do it the same way. So, and we have about, last time I checked, I think it was about 49 to 51% of Minnesotans are under a self-insured plan. So you could still, again, have some people where they have a high deductible. Hopefully it won't be many. We're certainly, you know, going to be watching that. But I think, you know, when you think about these children who are, we know that 70% of the kids in the juvenile justice system have one or more mental health diagnoses. We want to make sure that we're identifying these kids early and getting them into treatment. And so if for a family, you know, having a large deductible is a barrier to doing this, we want to be able to make that happen and give the flexibility to the counties to do that.
Representative Howell.
So can you, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you clarify then who pays?
Madam Chair, Representative, this is the counties. And we know that we're working with them on some language to make it a little bit more flexible for them and not a mandate.
And Representative Frischer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to follow up on Representative Howell's line of questioning. That was my question, who the intent to pay. So the intent right now would be that it would fall on the counties at this point.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. The counties get money for every screen that's done, and so then that money can also be used to help pay for a diagnostic assessment. And that's kind of the whole purpose of giving you know, dollars to the county for every screen that's completed.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a quick follow-up. So that money, that state money that's going to flow into the counties. So my question to you, Representative Mueller, you mentioned this will go to probably HHS policy, civil laws. Is there going to be a fiscal note on this?
Representative Mullery?
Madam Chair, I don't know yet.
Okay.
We haven't heard back from yet.
Ms. Abderholden.
Madam Chair, Representative, this is an existing program that the counties get paid for the screen. So this shouldn't, I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to do a fiscal note on it because this doesn't change that.
Okay, Representative Frischer.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And just follow up, but this will increase the screening, so won't it increase the cost?
Ms. Abderholden.
Madam Chair, I'm going to let the department answer that one.
Mr. Reese.
Madam Chair, Representative, the way this program works, we have about $4.6 million dedicated to this screening program. And the way we set it up is that counties get paid based on how many screens they complete. So, and it's a pretty good amount per screening. And those, that amount covers the cost for counties to do this work. You know, a screening, sitting out with the family, making all those arrangements, it doesn't take a lot of time. So I think the last time I looked at it, they get over $400 per screen. So it's a pretty good amount of money to help offset some of the costs for the uninsured and underinsured. And again, it's based on how many screenings counties do.
Representative Frischer.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And okay, so just forgive me, so I just want to work this through in my mind. But so you have $4.6 million set aside. In here we've said that we'll allow more screenings, which is good, I get all that, and in a shorter time frame. So essentially we're going to have more screenings, which could have more cost. Do you think the 4.6 will be enough?
Mr. Reese.
Madam Chair, Representative, currently some counties don't do many screenings. So it's based on the counties that really have aggressive policy to do this. Of course, you know, could there be more money out there? Sure. But the way I've heard, this has been a pretty good program to help fund some of these areas for the uninsured and underinsured.
Thank you.
Representative, we have Representative Meyer first. Okay, Representative Howell.
I just want to follow up on that. If they have insurance, then how does they still get the $400 for the screening, and they get paid by the insurance company? How does that I'm starting to question how this all works.
Mr. Reese.
Madam Chair, no, certainly private insurance has to be utilized first. These dollars are utilized when there's no other funding available. And again, we're looking at the under and underinsured. So if there's other funding available, this is like the last resort for counties to use when they don't have other funds for this target population.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Myra?
Madam Chair, thank you. This testimony has not been reassuring to me, and I'm still concerned with line 3.27 and 3.28. Screening results shall be considered private data, and the commissioner shall not collect individual screening results, and having that struck. Madam Chair, would ask that we would have a roll call on this, and I just can't support this as long as this language is the way it is. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So moved. All right, we'll take public testimony now, and then we'll have a call. Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, we have one more witness.
One more witness.
Linda Hansen from Dakota County Community Corrections.
Welcome. Would you introduce yourself, please, and go ahead.
Hi, my name is Linda Hansen, and I work as a mental health coordinator with Dakota County Corrections. I also serve on the Children's Subcommittee for Mental Health and have worked with the Juvenile Justice Work Group. I am certainly here to represent my own opinions as a mental health professional working in a local corrections department rather than the county's position. So I'd like to, Madam Chair, and members, thank you for the opportunity to come up and speak. My other cohorts have already spoken a lot about this assessment. My purpose of coming up today is really to, as a line staff that uses this tool to represent its importance and to answer any questions about that. Within my position in a local corrections department, I administer this screening on a daily basis. At court, we have another social worker that does this work. I mostly work in a juvenile center and a day treatment program. So I have seen the usefulness of this tool over the past 13 years. And we moved within our department from looking at kids and their external behaviors to understanding a little bit more about their possible needs. Now, we've talked about this being a screening, and it is indeed that, a screening. So each person, each county, and everybody that uses this tool, there is not a specific positive and negative. This tool is designed for your own use to decide when it meets a criteria that really alerts you that something else might be happening. So Dakota County and Scott County might choose a different cutoff for this screening. We say two cautions or a warning. The categories in this screening include, again, a screening, just a temperature that says this might be really necessary to look at for this child's increased possibility of success under alcohol and drugs, angry irritability, somatic complaints, depression, anxiety, thought disorder, and traumatic events. So when those are elevated, then a mental health professional talks with that youth and determines whether that looks like this might be an area of concern. So when this data is collected, we do them both hard copy and we do them on a computer. What comes out of our computer and goes to DHS is that we had 50, 100, 300 kids screened. It doesn't say anything about whether they met criteria under depressed anxiety, thought disorder, traumatic events. It doesn't say anything about the screen. It just says that we identified that this child should be looked at further by a mental health professional. This information within our system has been invaluable. It collects data. It gives us information immediately on the front line of whether that child might be at a safety risk and whether they need immediate assistance, whether they have anxiety at such a rate within our juvenile center that we want to provide assistance immediately to them. Because I've used the tool, I use it I use it to a lot of benefits. When I call parents to tell them of the results of this tool, I haven't had one single parent say, I don't want to hear that. I don't want the information. I'm concerned about where that information's going. Every single parent says to me, thank you so much for understanding my child. Thank you so much for getting me the help, etc. I have, because again, I do so many of these, I understand areas that really concern us in our department. One of them is alcohol and drug use. That at a time we didn't have alcohol and drug abuse programs within our department to help these kids, and so that continues to be a concern in all of their functioning. We now know from these screenings, doing so many of them, that we need those services within our juvenile center. We need to meet that particular need so globally across all of the kids that we serve. Another one is the traumatic events that this screening does. It does it inadequately. It doesn't do it enough. And the state is working on that. Numerous agencies are working on that. But that alone has really transformed how we treat our kids, and we're looking at trauma-informed practices. So when Ms. McLafferty talked about, we want information to guide our practices, we don't have any intention of having this information with anybody's name on, but we do want information to know from the kids we work in what their needs are and how to provide those services, how to put in evidence-based practices to directly address those kids' needs. These screenings help us tremendously. They help each family. When we're done with the screening, when I call a parent, I follow them all the way through. This is how your health insurance works. This is how you ask for help from a mental health clinic. You call and say, I'm concerned about my child's behaviors. Others have expressed those concerns as well. I'd like to have my child assessed further, and walk them all the way through. When we talk about the underinsured and the uninsured, we have a number of families that are absolutely struggling, and I hope your concern is addressed with the new health care, that the deductibles are so high, the kids are not getting treatment. And the intent was to take these dollars and help those families. And Representative, I also thank you for your concerns. About the data, that would take a whole other hour of us protecting these youth in helping them find their way to functioning and finding their way to employment and being and moving on to citizens that we want them to be. And there's so many barriers in place. Their mental health and finding their needs and servicing them and helping them through those really is important to help them on their way.
Thank you, and Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a question for Representative Mullery. As I'm listening, and with Representative Moline's line of questionings and Representative Myra, and with the roll call on, I'm admittedly on the fence here. So my question to you is, by striking this language in 327 and 328, how did we improve this bill?
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair and Representative Kreisha. By striking, how did we improve it? My understanding was that the department needed something on that, but I was told that what we could do is leave in the first seven words of line 3.27 and only strike, and the commissioner shall not collect individual screening results. And would that be amenable, or is that
Representative Kreisha.
Solve it?
And I'm sure Representative Myra and Representative Moline probably have more follow-up, but I don't understand why we wouldn't leave the whole thing in. I mean, that's really problematic that, we can keep it as private data, but aren't we just giving the commissioner leeway here that just doesn't seem to make sense? I mean, for me personally, that whole line, that wouldn't work, no. Just to be blunt.
Okay, Mr. Mullery, you have a comment?
Yeah, Madam Chair, not at DHS, and okay. I can't answer a question for DHS.
Ms. Abderholen looks ready.
Madam Chair, Representative, the big part is is really on line 3.28, the individual screening results, because right now, all we know is they got a screen. We don't know if it was positive or negative. And so, I think what we were just kind of all talking about is if you reinstated the language, screening results shall be considered private data, period, but then took out the part that the department can't collect the individual screening results, that would help. Because again, we wanted to do that evaluation to say, so are they negative or positive? Are kids getting connected to the treatment and services that they need? But not have this isn't public data. This isn't like you can call up and say, hey, you know, how did Johnny do? That's not what we wanted to have happen.
Okay, Representative Kreisha?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Okay, so two things. First of all, again, I'll ask, we're doing this now, so how would taking out and the commissioners shall collect individual screening results improve the process and improve the bill? And the second question is, the parent opt-in and the parent opt-out is also a problem for me. But you can address those.
Sure.
Mr. Reed.
Madam Chair, Representative. So again, the way that the language reads right now, currently, as I indicated, in our SSI system, county workers have a field that says a screening was completed, yes or no. That's all we know. So we have no idea to do an evaluation on an aggregate of this money to determine how many kids got referred on for a diagnostic assessment and what services they are receiving. So we've been unable to do evaluation to determine how effective this is. So that's why the language that's being proposed today would provide the department an opportunity to do more of that work, to have that linear model of saying, okay, if we have 2,000 kids, 1,000 kids got referred for a diagnostic assessment. We know that then. Then we want to find out how many services they get. We have a responsibility to monitor these dollars and find out how it's being used. So this information would help the department. And as Ms. Everwell said, is we don't have to make it available to everyone. Just the department has to have some aggregate information to effectively evaluate how this program is performing.
Okay, Representative Barrett.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just following up on that, I actually had another question or two, but following up on this one because I think it's really important. The way the bill reads is the screening results are no longer private. And then it requires the counties to report the number of kids who have received an assessment. But it doesn't prohibit the state from asking for more information. So it leaves that open. So it, by rule, by whatever way the department would want it, they could get more information because we've just made this information non-private. And I think that's where the concern is. So maybe I could state it. It looks like there may be some confusion. All 3.28, 3.29, and 3.30 do is say what the counties have to do. It says they shall report. It doesn't prohibit other information from going to the state, as I read it. It leaves it open. The door is wide open for a lot of formerly private data to get to the state. And I think that's what a lot of us are concerned about.
I think Representative Reinert would like to address this.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Barrett, I would just ask you to read lines 3.23 to 3.26, which says the privacy of children receiving the screening and their families comply with Minnesota Government Data Practices Act and HIPAA. So I think that that addresses your concern. The data is protected under both state and federal law.
Madam Chair.
Representative Barrett.
And Representative Reinert, if that were true, I think we should leave 3.27 and 3.28 in. Then it would give comfort language to both in this situation.
Is the difference here between the children and their screening results, Representative Reinert?
I just wanted to respond to the Representative Barrett's question. As I'm hearing the testimony, you could leave the first half could be left in there, but if you leave the commissioner shall not collect individual screening results, then there's nothing to aggregate. There's no data to aggregate if the
That's
commissioner.
The
Well, if there's no data to aggregate, there's no further, the study goes nowhere because you don't know that 70% of the children had positive screening results and 30% have negative. They can't aggregate because they don't have that, even that much. They don't have that. They only know that the test occurred. So if they can't have any data to aggregate, the study has no goal, no data to work with.
So, well, I think that needs to be better defined because it's not clear to me and many other people.
Representative Howell.
Well, could I
okay,
ask?
Okay, Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, if Ms. Hansen could come back up just for a second. So thank you, Ms. Hansen. I wanted to follow up kind of on the thoughts that you had shared regarding your good work you do at the county. And I don't want you to leave our committee without thinking that we, or at least I, really appreciate the good work you do. There are a lot of kids out there that need your help. You provide excellent care, I'm sure, help to getting people and our children the medical care they need. So I wanted to let you know that.
Madam Chairman and members, thank you so very much, and it's my complete pleasure to do so. Love those kids.
You're welcome.
All right. Moving on to Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is if you're going to collect that data, that's great. You're going to keep it private. That would be my concern. The other question is how long are you going to keep it? And I know I'll get another shot at this during, if this comes to civil law, because these are the questions that we're going to ask, but as long as we're here, how long do you need that data on that child that's under 18 or under 21? I'm not quite sure where we're drawing the line of where we're going to do this, but if they're juveniles, I have to believe they're under 18. Are we going to keep this for another 10, 20? How long? When do you say, you know what, we're going to keep that data on that person this long, and now we're going to dump it, and we're going to...
Madam Chair, Representative, we haven't come up with the parameters, but we could certainly accommodate the committee by looking at some parameters that have been suggested today. So we're only collecting what we need for our evaluation purposes to evaluate this program. So we could certainly come up with some of those parameters, as you indicated.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's, to get some comfort level here, we need that, because right now, I'm not very comfortable with the way, there's no determination on that, and I think you need to determine that before we get there. And the other the concern I have is, the way this was before, the parent opted into the process. Now the parent has to opt out of the process. Is there a reason why we're doing that? Why are we not leaving the opt-in process? Why doesn't that work?
Madam Chair, Representative, the opt-in process was the original part of the language. It got changed a few years ago. And the child welfare part of this equation, they still have that in, and this was changed. Parents have more, I think, control of the process when they can go to court and say, I don't want this screening for my child. And so we really look at parents being an integral part of this whole process. We actually came up with a form when we put this out that parents could bring to court. Otherwise, if they don't have that, and the way it is now, they could be getting screenings without their involvement, and we think that the parents should be part of that. The other part that's important about this, we saw a decrease in the number of screenings based on this language that was amended. So in the juvenile justice, we have less screenings because of this language.
Representative Howe?
Is that you got less screenings because of the opt-in or the opt-out?
The opt-in.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, ma'am. I believe that would mean to me that the parent is in control and they're not opting in, because otherwise, if I have to opt out and I have to go to court to opt out, I'm not. Why would I want to go to court to opt out? That to me really puts the burden on the parent to try to get out of the situation, instead of putting on the burden on the parent to opt in and say, my kid needs help, I want to get him help, what form do I sign?
Ms. Abderholden?
Madam Chair, Representative, the problem that we have discovered is that some families just don't know what this means and so don't opt in. And so that more often than not, now you have a judge deciding that the screening is going to be done. Before, it was easier for the family to say, oh no, I really don't want that to be done. And that was often then, you know, accepted by the court, because this, you know, it's hard to understand all the stuff that's going on in the juvenile justice system when you're kind of in the midst of it. So we actually thought that in some ways it puts the power back on the families, because if they really don't want this done, that becomes more respected by the judge, instead of judges just saying, no, we're just going to order the screen. And so, you know, we had it this way before, and it worked well. And it got changed for
Madam Chair.
For reasons.
And I'd like to move on to Mr. Representative Moran.
Can I respond to that statement,
okay,
please? I think in remember in trying to remember earlier testimony from a previous session is that one of the biggest reasons that many of the kids who needed to have these mental assessments were in out-of-home placement. And because they were in out-of-home placement in the foster care system, parents were not directly involved. So there was many kids who were sitting there and who needed assessment who were not getting the assessment because the parents were not engaged in the process. So I think in a big way that was one of the reasons why they decided to opt out, because the assessments were needed and parents were not there to provide that assessment.
Madam Chair, I did want to point out just one thing to Representative Howell. There were, I believe it was four parents on this study group that was created by the statute, and believe me, I went to the meetings to watch, and they were very protective of parents' rights, and not one of them objected to this issue.
All right, and Representative Moran, did you have a different subject?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions that I wanted to ask. Just for some, to bring some clarity around a process that I don't have clarity on. I have several questions, and one being, once you have completed the test, do the results identify the youth by name, by age, by birthday, by location? Is there any identifiable indicators?
Not to DHS. In the reporting to DHS, there is no identifying data. There is no name. There is no date of birth. There are no results. It's just right now that the test has been completed, and we're asking for a little bit more study, but again, never a name.
Okay. So,
Representative Moran?
Madam Chair, so in collecting the data to use to really determine who are getting whether the screenings are positive, negative, or is that for the purpose of next step with that youth, or what is the purpose?
Correct. The purpose
Ms.
of
Nancy.
Determining, I'm sorry, Madam Chairman, Madam Chair and members, the purpose of deciding where that cutoff is to then talk with the parent about the needs of their child, that they may represent more needs than the county, the social worker, the teachers may be able to provide, and that we would refer them to a mental health clinic, give them the option, and help them through that process.
Representative Moran.
Madam Chair, and so once you've done that, how, again, long do you hold on to this information that is not identifiable? I mean, is it logged? Is it, what do you do with that information?
Ms. Hansen.
Madam Chair and members, the result of positive or negative, and what we did with that does remain a part of the juvenile's file that is private.
Okay, thank you. Representative Moran, anything else?
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Branson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know Mr. Mullery or who to direct this comment to, but first off, I just want to say to Representative Howe, he brought up some excellent points and great questions regarding the data retention, which was one of my concerns as well. And regarding the opt-out and opt-in, you know, opt-out just makes it, like Representative Howe said, a much more complicated for parents regarding time. If they have to go through all this hassle, they're just going to say, well, I don't have time to deal with this. That's fine. Just collect this data. And we don't know what that data is going to be used for. I think if you look on a national level now, there is a growing apprehension in our country about how government is collecting data, why they're collecting data, how does the government plan on using that data. And there's plans that, you know, we don't even know yet about. So I think that the points that my side of the aisle is raising regarding the data and how those results are going to be used, I think should be well taken, and I'm hoping that we can work on some comfort language regarding that. My question is, We talked about data retention. We don't know how long this data will be on the books for, or what it will be used for eventually. What about selling the data? Can the government sell the data that is collected from the screening results to health companies or other companies for whatever reason? And you might think that's kind of a crazy thing, but we're just looking down the road here. There's nothing in here that says that the government cannot sell this information.
Madam Chairman and
Ms. Hansen.
Madam Chairman and members, I'd like to respond first to the opt-in and opt-out. Again, being a clinician, right there with the kids working with this, I have to just throw out a couple more barriers, and that is that we do have a lot of parents that it is an extreme hardship to be at court, and so they aren't there, and they don't have the opportunity as well to opt in. More so, though, is that going through that court process, when they come into court, and it's slightly different in each county, of course, the family sits there until it's their turn to enter into the courtroom. That can be 3 and 4 hours, unfortunately. So when they get to court, and at the end, then the judge says, would you like to have, or the worker asks, would you like to have a mental health screening? Unfortunately, a lot of that gets, we are guessing anecdotally, a lot of those say, are you kidding me? I want to get out the door. And we've missed an incredible opportunity again to help that child and the family look at the needs that are in the way. And we are logging all of those external behaviors. We're taking all of the information about the crimes they commit. We're logging those, and that's what remains. And then we go forward with that. So again, I absolutely support the opt out so that we can capture those. I haven't had a parent ever tell me, well, I didn't want that information. I don't want you to have that information. It's quite the opposite, is that it leads to those getting help. In terms of selling data, I'm not understanding what data you are understanding could be sold. So the data would be Dakota County screened 300 youth, and 200 of those youth were positive, and they were referred on for further assessment. That's the data that we'd be collecting. It's my wish, I don't know exactly what data is in the language, forgive me, but I would certainly also want that data separated with race, age, again, to lead our practice. It's not going to say anything about an individual. So they can't get out of the data that's not there.
Okay, sufficient, Representative Franson? Okay, Representative Myra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm stuck back on line 3.28, and that first word says individual. What I'm hearing from you is that aggregate information is going to be sent to the department. That's already okay. What this is prohibiting is individual results, and that's where I have a problem. It's individual results. There's no prohibition on getting aggregate. So I think this language really should stay in there.
Comment by Mr. Rees.
Madam Chair, Representative, currently the way it works is that the county's workers have used the social service information system. That's the department's system where county workers enter in their casework, decide where their notes go. So that's where the information would be currently stored, so that the worker has an idea on how to manage that particular case. So in terms of individual data, so if you have a particular kid that a county worker has a case on, they're in the system, they have their caseload, that's part of the file for that individual child. So currently they just know that a screening was done, and that is it. So we are wanting to say what happened after that screening. So it would be individual data in the system, but we would look at the aggregate in terms of trying to determine how many kids got a screen and how many kids went on for services.
Okay, Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, just to the testifier from the county and then to DHS, where in the proposed language does it say that, or the current or proposed language, that the name of the child cannot be transferred from the county to DHS? Because what I heard was the name is attached to the screening results at the county level, but that identifying features and the name never goes to DHS, and I'm just trying to see where it says that in the current statute or the new language where the name of the individual cannot be transferred to DHS.
Madam Chair, Representative, there are two systems that this data is being looked at. The department has a system, SIS. The juvenile system has a different data system. So there's two different systems that currently, this language right now prohibits the commissioner to collect information in our particular system. The Department of Corrections can collect information because this is about our system. So we get aggregate data from the Department of Corrections. They collect it within their system that talks about these screenings and also their referrals and so forth. But the department can't collect information in their particular system. So that's the difference between the two different systems right now. The Department of Correction has the Court Service Tracking System. The Department of Human Services has Social Service Information System. So they're two different systems. And so that might help clarify some of the differences.
Madam Chair.
Representative Moline.
No, actually, not at all. What I'm asking is, can you get the name of the individual?
Yes.
Mr. Rees.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, I mean, that goes to my biggest concern here is that the name is attached and that DHS can get the name of the individual who was screened. Is that correct?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, currently, yes. Right now, we have the name of the individual that the screening was completed. That's what we have. Because caseworkers have to have a system to manage their caseload, to manage how they do their work. So they have to enter a name into a system that tracks the work that they do with that children. So, yes.
Okay.
Representative Moline.
Madam Chair, well, I guess I'm just confused now because the county said that the name wasn't attached to the information that goes to DHS, but now it sounds like DHS does have the name. And, I mean, I'm going to go back to my original concerns. I personally don't want DHS having more data on individuals, so.
Representative Mullery, do we have some more comments from the county?
Madam Chair, this the technical what goes back and forth, they're discussing it right now, and I certainly am not an expert on that.
Ms. Nels Hansen.
See if I can do it right now, Madam Chair and members. Through our system, in the juvenile system, when we send our information to DHS, there is absolutely no names attached. So we pull the data from CSTS, is our data system, and we report those numbers to DHS. Now, the SSIS system that they have, they'll have to talk about that differently, but in corrections, we don't share data with DHS on names. It's only the aggregate data that says this many number, and we're screened. And we'd like to send this many number were screened, and this many were referred on for a diagnostic assessment.
Representative Moline.
Madam Chair, I think the issue here is that DHS is saying that they do have the names of the individuals, and there's nothing in the new language that would prohibit them from getting the names of the individuals. And that's my concern. I mean, if people haven't been paying attention, DHS is always trying to collect more data on individuals. In fact, I believe one of their legislative priorities is to actually start collecting fingerprints on people. So, I mean, I just have great hesitation in allowing DHS to have more data on individuals. And there's just so much that's unclear about how this is all working and what the new language would do that I personally am uncomfortable. And obviously hearing from other members, there's a level of discomfort as well.
Mr. Rees.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think it's important to try to clarify what's being said here today. Linda works for in the correction system, and the correction system, the Department of Corrections, has their own data collection system. The Department of Human Services has a different system where all kids that get cases are in there. It's just not these kids we're talking about. Anytime someone enters the county for services, this is the system that counties use for all kids that are getting services. It's just not this group of kids, it's all groups of kids. Kids that are under a work group for child protection, kids that are getting mental health. So it's the system that the department has for the county to use. Linda's talking about the system that the Department of Corrections has, and she's correct. That information from the Department of Corrections is sent to us in an aggregate way. We have no names of those kids that comes from corrections. So I think it's important to understand how there's two different systems. We get aggregate data from the Department of Corrections. However, in our system, we can't, we have that individual in their case that counties use for casework. And that's the system that has been adopted for all cases that kids have that get services. It's just not this group of kids. So I think it's important to understand those two distinctions.
Well, Madam Chair, I would agree that it's important to understand those two distinctions. I think the issue I'm having is there's a lot of misunderstanding about what exactly this language does and what the implications of it are. So I'm not sure if we're going to be voting today or just laying this bill over so we can actually get some clearer answers. But I'm not really comfortable with moving forward.
Representative Mullery, do you have an opinion as to whether we should lay this over or take more testimony from the audience, or how do you want to move forward?
Madam Chair, I think at the end it should be laid over. I think there's confusion as to what the facts are, and since we still have, well, we don't have a lot, but I think you should take, if there's other testimony, and then we can try and have the department and the counties and maybe put together a more clear explanation of the facts of what comes here, what files already exist and isn't affected by this bill, what is actually being affected by this bill, because it seems to be all muddied now. And so if there's other testimony at this time, I think that would be good to take, and then at the end lay the bill over.
All right. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this? Welcome. Could you identify yourself and then go forward?
Hi there, Madam Chair and members. My name is Ryan Erdman, and I work on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Association of Community Corrections Act Counties, and I'm here also today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Administrators. A couple of things in the bill that caught our attention were generally supportive. We would reiterate the need for greater use of assessment with kids. The language on the payment, there's some good discussion on that earlier. I think it reflects our concern if we get to the point where the $4.6 million is inadequate, where the $400 per screen is not adequate to cover the further assessment. But, you know, I've talked with Ms. Aberholden this evening. I think we'll work with them to make sure that this language works for us. Like I said, it is written. We're a little concerned, but we think we can work out something mutually agreeable. Also on the data collection, we would agree that there is some additional need for data collection. When you look at how little there is, it really does not help us determine best practices. We would suggest that the language as written is a little too vague in terms of what it is we're collecting and how that's done. We would want to narrow that slightly. Again, we would be happy to work with Ms. Aberholden and Representative Mullery on that to tighten that up. But we would agree with the general need for more some more data on that to determine whether these screens are working the way we want them to. So those are what we identified. I think from the nature of the conversation and my conversation with Ms. Aberholden, we can work those out. But we did want to just sort of make you aware that that's the county's reaction to that.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else in the audience that would like to speak? Okay, and Representative Mullery?
Madam Chair, I think the chair could lay it over.
We'll lay over this bill.
Chair can do that.
Inclusion. Okay, we'll lay over the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And with that, I adjourn. We are adjourned.